Hi, this is the Acquire podcast from the Audphonic Podcast Network, and I'm Jenny Wright. This is the podcast that delves deep into the world of list building and online events, and it's designed to empower entrepreneurs and marketers with the knowledge and strategies to master these essential business growth tactics. Today, we have Sam Droshak, and he's also the co-founder and chief process scientist at Truvel. Sam and his team are on a mission to transform businesses by reducing wasteful activities and providing innovative tools, software, and expert content to streamline operations. With a decade of experience in management consulting, Sam has worked with companies in various sectors to simplify and enhance their operations using fundamental business science. That's not all. He is also the author of Becoming a Conscious Business. This is a great book about efficiency and biological systems and how these principles can be applied to modern business. I'm really excited because today we're actually going to explore the process, like the power of process mapping, and how we can use this in digital businesses to improve results with launches, also with probably with lead acquisition. And we're going to dive into Sam's unique lead generation and acquisition strategy for Truvel. This is his SaaS company. So Sam, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Can you start us off with explaining what process mapping is and how it can help and benefit digital businesses?
Absolutely. Process mapping is nothing more than visualizing process data. And when we talk about process data in this context, we're really talking about the data that describes a scope of your operating reality. And that may sound pretty wide in terms of a net, but it's the most important data that people are looking for today because it's the data you need for implementing software systems, any type of automation strategy. It helps you understand customer personas. It's really talking about what is the mechanisms that people use their energy for to produce value in the marketplace. So process mapping is really all about understanding those different data sets and being able to draw them consistently so you can communicate that process data to yourself and other stakeholders.
All right. So this feels like process mapping is something that would be several layers below maybe what your average entrepreneur is playing with, but it's something that seems like it's built into the systems that we use every day, say ActiveCampaign for our email marketing or your funnel designing software or things like that. Would that be accurate?
Yes, absolutely. The only thing I would caveat is I don't even think it's several layers below. It's really right always under the conversation you're having, which is What is the underlying process that you're trying to create, support, communicate to other people? And even though process mapping can sound intimidating, it could just be as easy as picking up pen and paper and just having a language and having the wherewithal draw out the process itself for whatever the subject is.
Okay. I like that because I don't think it's being talked about in the conversation of how we're achieving our list building, our lead generation, our launches in a really open conversation. I think people assume, and I think I just did, that process mapping is something that's baked into the software that we're using, but maybe not something that we're doing every day in our businesses. And when I think about it a little bit more deeply, we are using it. We are talking about it, especially if we're looking at the end goal, say, of a launch, and we're working backwards with a launch calendar, trying to figure out the things that need to be achieved or done to get to our goal. So that seems like it would fit. So something like Miro would be process mapping, right?
Yeah. So Miro is an open canvas tool. So you can do process mapping in it, and you can do other things in it too, other types of visualizations. So I'm only making the separation because Miro is not a process mapping specific tool,
No. But
rather anywhere you have a whiteboard or a blank utility where you can draw, you can build process maps within it.
Okay, so Truvel, this is your company, this is your SaaS software. How is it different than what people are currently using? Or like I said, I just brought up Miro. Obviously there's a big difference. What is that underlying difference, or what's that big top line difference?
Sure. The top line difference is that it has a language in it. So it's an opinionated software tool, opinionated for process mapping specifically. So unlike Miro, Lucid Charts, Microsoft Visio, anything where you start with a blank canvas and you have hundreds of shapes and templates to choose from, it's kind of a build your own adventure. The Truvel tool is not a blank canvas. It has locked shapes in it. Those shapes require specific metadata, and it really is meant to bring the learning curve way down. So you're not having that intimidating, hey, draw me a process. And then you have to think about, well, do I want to use the star shape? Do I want to use purple?
That's incredibly intimidating, by the way.
Yeah. It is. I mean, that's honestly, that particular piece is why most people aren't doing a lot of process drawing and process communication today, which is that they just don't have the language for it. They have to make it up on the fly. So the Truval tool, the only difference is it's a whiteboard, you draw a process on it, but it's got everything structured with guidelines and queued up for you so that hopefully you can get in there and you don't have to have that intimidating thought process or that barrier of what am I going to draw, but really just what am I trying to say, and it will help you do that.
And that's the basis of sort of the Truval mapping language that you've created, is that correct?
Yes, the Truval mapping language is just all the conventions and the opinion in which how one would view a process in reality. And what is the relevant data and the right detail level to write it down so they can be understandable by other people? So the conventions to make that happen is all encompassed within the Truval mapping language.
Okay. And could you share sort of how somebody who has an online business who wants to launch a, you know, a high level coaching program or something like that could use process mapping or Truval in particular to make that happen?
Absolutely. So if you're trying to launch an online coaching business as the use case, the first thing I always tell entrepreneurs is just write down the process of your whole life cycle of a customer, the actual process, and map that, because that's going to be the blueprint of your business. And that will include all the acquisition and the lead gen and actually the conversion, but then also the process of engagement. Am I making them pay online? Am I making them call me? How am I doing all these things? So it's one of those things to get your house organized, but it's way more than that, because once you go through that exercise, if you then want to partner with best in class SaaS products for any part of that process, then you're going to end up talking to vendors. And the first thing they're going to ask you is, what's your process? What are you trying to do? Well, you already have it written down. So the writing down serves so many different purposes, not only for self-clarification, but if you're hiring contractors, and a lot of times if you're a coaching entrepreneur, you're probably going to be hiring maybe Upwork contractors or people from other countries to help you. So being able to communicate in a universal process language, instead of having to create long form documents, recreate the wheel, do long conference call meetings. I mean, it's really, the value is there in many, many different use cases. And it just starts with what are you trying to do and making it in a seamless way.
Would this help also with things like SOPs that you're building into your business as well? Would this replace like the long form SOP? Sort of Google Doc and all that kind of stuff with like a Loom video and things, would you use Truval or something like this instead?
So I wouldn't say instead, but I would say in conjunction with.
Okay, or I like that.
Yeah, because SOPs can get very nuanced. Yeah. And especially if you're talking about click for click or you're building Loom videos and you're trying to demonstrate how to actually go through an experience for, let's say maybe you're training a new user or something like that. But the one thing I'll say is when I build SOPs with clients, having a process map on top that you can read in 2 minutes or less and understand the entire scope of the document and orient yourself in what the objectives of the process are, what you're trying to do, that's extremely helpful in SOP documentation. And not only that, when I do a map process maps, the process map serves as an outline for an SOP. So if you do the process map first, you know, okay, I need to go through this in stepwise fashion, and this one needs a Loom video. This one needs an actual, you know, link to an outside demo, but the process map serves as that backbone, and also that serves as the table of contents, the summary for an SOP, for an example.
When you're talking in my head, I'm thinking of different application processes for this. And in my space, in my world of building online events, and some of them are very intricate. So online summits, they take about 4, sometimes even 6 months to plan. And there's a million moving parts. And if they're in person, there's also a million moving parts. Something with process mapping, instead of just writing a checklist, because a lot of people just write a checklist, and I've been working off checklists for years, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but having the process mapping side of things a little bit, going a little bit more deep, and also having something top line that everybody can see would help you figure out where there might be areas that are missing, things that aren't being thought about, or opportunities where you could improve, or even things you could possibly trim. And I think it's important for people to lay out their events in such a way, or lay out their lead gen in such a way where you're seeing all this. And some people are very fly by the seat of your pants. I am not one of those people. I prefer to have things planned, but I also recognize that I don't always see all of the opportunities. And I think this kind of process would help.
Absolutely. And the one thing I would say compared to a checklist, or you can do all the planning you want, mm-hmm. but the one advantage that process mapping is always going to have is it lays it out in linear time, and it allows you to do very intuitive if then alternate paths. So for instance, if you have a checklist or you have a long form document you're trying to share with people, it's great if it's just, okay, do these list of things in any order and it doesn't matter, or do them maybe from top to bottom if you can. But in reality, it never usually plays out that way. The one thing about process maps that's very powerful in communicating a process design or an idea, especially when you're planning a large event or you're planning a large project, is you have the ability in a process map to say, who is doing what? When are they doing it? When are they doing it in relation to other activities that have been done or are planned? And if something goes off, like, oh, this vendor's too expensive, what's the other path? Do you call me? Do you go ahead and plan another route? You can actually walk through in your mind and plan at that level. And it's way more intuitive for people to understand, because once you put it into a long form, you lose the sort of linear time orientation, which makes all long form documentation difficult to consume and execute on.
Completely agree. I think you get lost in the steps and you end up five pages down on the page and you sort of forget that linear timeline. And I will say that, you know, some of the regular things that we use, like Gantt charts, which I absolutely do not enjoy using, by the way. I just find them visually not something that I can see the whole project. I know how they work, I understand them, but I don't like building them. Would something like Truvel, would that make it more simple to see that sort of linear timeline?
So for process mapping, I wouldn't say it's a one-to-one Gantt chart equivalent.
Of course not.
Eventually it could be, if you have that level of detail, but it's really locked. The Truvel mapping language especially is locked into an operational level of detail. So you can read it and you can understand what the process is meant to achieve, with who, what systems. It makes it real. And especially when you're talking about entrepreneurship, when there's a lot of unknowns and you're doing a lot of process design versus looking at live processes, designing at that level of detail can be a very rewarding exercise. Now, when you talk about Gantt charts, it depends on the context, right? If you're building a Gantt chart for maybe a process that you're going to execute in sequence over a month's time, I think a process map could be good for that. If you're doing a Gantt chart for a two-year project and you're really cascading and you're looking at costs and things, it might not be a one-to-one match. But regardless, I think Gantt charts, because they have to go at a higher level of detail, I mean, what's the utility a lot of the time? So it's one of those things that I'm not going to pretend it's going to be your cure for everything, but I definitely think it's going to make things more tactical and more realistic.
I like to look at things in terms of my tech stack. What can I use and what elements within that tech stack are going to benefit me for the particular project that I'm working on? And I really believe, and I talk about this quite a bit, that there is not a one-stop, you know, one-size-fits-all software that's going to take care of everything. So, you know, Airtable is not the end-all be-all, right? And Asana is definitely not the end-all be-all for project management and so on and so forth. And, you know, you can go into way more detail, but when I look at my tech stack, I'm always looking for the next thing that's going to help make a process more simple or allow me to be more organized or allow me to convey messages to either my team, myself, look at costings, like you said, and make sure that everything is working. So I like the simplicity that we're talking about, but also the detail. So it's like holding these two thoughts at once, the simplicity of process mapping and then the detail you can go into.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears, if I could. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to put one thing in there before I switch gears, because I think this is such a challenge that people are facing, understanding the tech stack. And I think the biggest thing about looking at the process layer first is, you know, people are overwhelmed by getting new software and integrating software in multiple systems into like an ecosystem that covers a process. They always make the mistake of, oh, well, this is the new system, I'm going to put everything in it. I'm going to put everything in Asana, or I'm going to put everything in Airtable. When in reality, if you're doing SaaS tools correctly, especially in a digital business, map your process end to end. Don't worry about the solutions. Just map what you're doing in each one. And then you really can pick each system for each phase of your process and replace it with more tactical, you know, conscientiousness. Because in the end, all these SaaS products have a different use case. And the companies that are really strong and they're scaling well, they mix and match. They're not afraid to know their process and find the right tool for the right part of the process and put together an experience that includes the strengths of all of these systems. So I just wanted to reiterate the importance of understanding your process agnostic of the solutions that you're thinking or having is going to be very critical to making that platform sense a reality.
Okay. I like that agnostic approach to it. I think you said it better than I did. So that's great. So on my little switch of gears, I want to talk about Truvel and I want to talk about your own strategy for lead acquisition and generating, you know, buyers, clients, however you want to talk about your people that are coming in and using Truvel, but I want to make sure that we're just trying to find out, how are you doing this? How are you growing the company? And also, how are you keeping them? How are you keeping people in Truvel?
Sure. So in full disclosure, we're pre-launch. So we're actually right about to launch. So I don't have much to comment on how we're keeping customers, because for all
I know, that's right.
We could put this out there and no one will use it. But I will say, in terms of how we're getting customers, marketing is one of the more unique parts of this company, because process mapping could be used by everybody. There's a lot of different roles. There's a lot of different personas that need this right now, but it's a good thing and a bad thing, because the marketing challenge of finding a market of everyone, you know, every marketer will hit you on the head, or at least the ones that I've talked to. It says you've got to hone in. So for us, the marketing challenge is really, which market do you pick first? Which personas do we think are going to get the company launched out the gate and build that traction and build some buzz and build some retention? So I'm happy to talk about the different parts of our launch strategy, but you're catching at this interesting time. So I'll just give a brief overview and then I'll let you pick at any particular place you want.
Okay.
So I think we're just starting with a pretty basic SaaS inbound strategy. So we're doing a lot of SEO building right now. We're trying to find ways to get people, the right people who are looking for process mapping and the right process capabilities, to find us on the web and be able to just come in through our website funnel. And what we decide, we set up HubSpot early. So we have HubSpot ready to go, and we're using HubSpot forms, and we're bringing people in. And then once we kind of understand if we're pulling anyone in, sort of this B2C strategy, then we'll switch to do maybe more actually ad campaigns and actually put some money into that if it looks like there's any promise there. And that's pretty basic, right? I mean, I think that SaaS model, you can talk to people that says that's not going to work because it's totally saturated. You can talk to people that says this is the basic foundation. Try it first, because if you know what you're doing, it's fairly low cost. And we've been working on it for 6 months coming up to launch. So I'll be honest, marketing is my Achilles heel. I can see your wheels turning. So I'm already feeling like, oh boy, I'm about to be lambasted.
No, I'm totally not going to lambast you, not at all. But my wheels are turning. I mean, I don't have a poker face. So when somebody's talking about launching, a lot of things are happening in the background and I'm thinking. And with SaaS companies, there are some, I'm one of the people who's going to be in the camp of, there are tried and true ways of approaching and getting those initial customers. And I think that is sort of just how people, I think it's just the way that we approach a SaaS launch, which is different, obviously, than like a, you know, like some of the launches that I do with some of my clients and whatnot, but I've worked on some SaaS companies. And with your launch upcoming, I think the strategies that you're doing are sound. Obviously, SEO, absolutely. Got to get that groundwork. You know, HubSpot, great sort of software to start off with. And I think you're so early in the stage of like getting this out there. Are you looking at partnerships? Are you looking at exposure strategies? You know, I know it's, you may not have these all on your sort of on your process map of what you're going to do, but it's going to be interesting to see what Truvel is going to do to get the word out.
Yeah, I agree. And what we're doing is, the one thing we have, we're a bootstrap startup and we have patience, I will say. And I think that gives us an edge, because we'd love to see if we can get anyone, if we cast the net and just see initial impressions from users outside of our ecosystem and see if anyone comes into the tool. We're kind of looking at, what does that look like? What does that feel like for initial users beyond our friend and family rounds of testing and feedback? And then to your point of, well, then can we really take this product, if it clears that hurdle, and then really start putting effort into partnerships, figuring out the right launch partners or joint venture partners, and then really enterprise clients, and what level of enterprise clients? Because the exciting thing about this tool is there's so many other SaaS companies that need this tool with their clients in order to make their product more effective. So it's really just a question of where and what order, because I will add one more thing to our launch strategy is, and something that I've been told you never do, but we've been talking, we're going to do it anyway. We also might be simultaneously doing some enterprise work, because we just have a good network between me and the other founders. Okay. A lot of people say, if you're going B2C, you don't want to do B2B simultaneously. I've been told that multiple times. So maybe, I don't know, maybe you don't agree. But in any sense, I think doing some networking, seeing what we can do at an enterprise level is also, we're just using our network and doing organic networking and seeing if we can get some larger accounts that way too. So that's the general strategy that we're going forward with.
I like it. I actually like the idea of getting some enterprise on board, they pay the bills and keep the lights on.
Right.
Right. So they're the ones that are, I mean, obviously enterprise is usually a larger package. You can usually get people to go for a yearly price and get, you know, advantageous yearly price at whatever percentage discount from monthly or whatnot. I like the idea of having the enterprise customers for sure. And then working on your, you know, your other monthly customers and things like that. It's not a bad strategy, really. We do the same thing with, we do the same thing in a lot of online events as well, right? So you usually have two levels in some of the stuff that I'm doing. You have two levels of potential participation. So it's usually the lower end level for the masses, right? And that's your lower price point, your lower monthly price point, and then the enterprise solution. And although, I mean, I kind of get why people say wait for the enterprise. I actually like the dual strategy. It makes sense.
We talked about it. I mean, the biggest thing is a lot of what we've always done successfully is find what's around you first, right? Mm-hmm. Despite any strategy you can think of that might be the best strategy at a given time, look first what's in your next concentric ring of influence.
Yes.
Who is your network? What are the people that can support you? Who are the people you can reach out to and actually potentially convert a sale right off the bat? Because when you're a small company and you're starting, or at least this is our opinion, you can think of the best strategy and then you can think of a budget for it. But why don't you start with the free strategy of calling all your friends and seeing what's going on? Because you don't know, you can't really forecast what that might come up with, what big partnership could come right out of that first wave. So we're setting the groundwork for both, and we're hoping to sort of let that shape our path a little bit.
I agree with that. I like it. It's it uses a lot of organic growth, which I think is a great foundation and doesn't rely too much on the paid advertising side of things, because you're maximizing your SEO, you're maximizing your organic reach, which is always going to have a lower cost acquisition, like a lower acquisition cost than anything else. And it's also that foundational group of people who, if they're happy, will shout it to everybody. We'll let everybody know. And that should be a great way for future acquisition, right? So yeah, it's a really interesting strategy. Thanks for sharing it. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And you know that, and I know you know, we don't have numbers yet, and we should have a conversation in a couple of months when you do, that customer loyalty is gonna be a vital component of launching this company and getting it out there. Do you guys have any tactics that you're thinking about for that retention piece?
So I would definitely say we're a net promoter score mentality company, and making sure that that's the number one. And, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with net promoter score, it's really that measure of anyone who touches the product, would they recommend it to a friend, to really measure that piece and understand the why without putting too much structure initially on early adopters around, well, did we give you everything you want? It's more, was your experience overall enough to organically recommend this to people in your network? And I think with that mentality, we don't have a firm, how are we going to achieve that? But it's really a strong active listening style that we're trying to bring into the launch, which is every user in the initial batch, how can we touch them personally? How can we have a conversation? How can our marketing staff actually reach out and engage them in a meaningful way to see what was good, what was bad, and really play off of that? Because like you said, retention and good experience and being able to actually have people do the marketing for us, I think is going to be the most critical part of our success, because we don't have a really strong channel that people are sitting around looking for this product.
Yeah.
So that's the early mentality. And when I have more details about what that ended up looking like and materializing, I'm happy to share.
That would be so cool to talk about and see what actually worked. I think, especially like you said, you don't have people sitting around looking for this solution, but they need it. I worked with many people like this. Actually, my own partner works in niche, and it's not something that everybody knows they need, but they need it. Everybody needs to be niched in. They have to do these kinds of things. They have to have the conversation, but not everybody realizes that having a conversation with like a niche specialist could solve all of that, could get them the information they need so they're not spinning their wheels, right? So I think there's going to be some education that you're going to have to put out there, obviously, so people realize that they need you. And it'll be interesting to see how you build the community. I'm really excited to find out more in, you know, 3 to 6 months for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also on the edge of my seat for my own selves.
And you're doing it from a different country right now, which is cool.
Yes, I am. We'll see. We'll be here until the holidays, and then I think things will get crazy when I get back to the States, so we'll see how that goes.
So what's the actual launch date?
TBD. So we're still waiting on a few hot fixes to come in and a few more bits of feedback, but this quarter, hopefully. I mean, we're really hoping to get it out there by the end of the year is our soft. So we don't have the big launch party or anything planned yet, but hopefully that'll be forthcoming.
Oh yeah, go. You have to do the soft launch first and work out all the kinks and the bugs and the issues, and then you can have your big party afterwards.
Yeah, hopefully.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate this. This has been really fun, Sam, to sort of geek out on process mapping, which you taught me about. I was a little bit of a novice when we first started talking about this, but it really makes sense. And then also the direction that Truffle's going and what, you know, even pre-revenue companies can think about when it comes to client acquisition and retention and all those kinds of things. So I appreciate your candor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate the great questions.
It was a lot of fun. And again, we'll have to come back and talk about it in 3 to 6 months and see where you're at and see where Truffle's at and everything. So we'll have to do that. I just want to thank, I just want to take a second and thank Sam for being here and also everybody who's listening. So the Acquire podcast is produced and edited by Jason Wheeler. And if you found today's episode valuable, please take a look at subscribing, rate, and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And thank you for being part of our growing community. Consider joining my Facebook group, where I'm excited to share and deliver content that empowers entrepreneurs and marketers with list building, lead gen, and launch strategy. And the Acquire podcast is brought to you by the Oddphonic Podcast Network. Thanks so much for listening.